Way too much going on for me to not say something. It is the news, according to me. Well, folks, hello. It is Monday. It is afternoon. It is well afternoon. It is, 3:53 Eastern Standard Time in the afternoon. Almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon as I'm recording this. And there's a whole lot of things going on. Of course, the events of the weekend that have taken place, that have transpired leading up to the rally in Pennsylvania. I actually went through Pennsylvania the day before, and I was actually in Pennsylvania the day after the convention or the rally and the big events that happened there. But I was in Virginia at a reunion. I was driving through Pennsylvania the day after the big events. I have to tell you, in my cup, which I have right here, I probably should pull my cup out of the refrigerator. I have my refrigerator right next to me. It's almost frozen. I have some sweet tea in my refrigerator here. I'd like to just share a few thoughts about what happened over the weekend, about my personal experience with this, in terms of what I went through. I don't do that I do it all the time, I guess. But I'm in Manchester, New Hampshire. New Hampshire. Or New Hampshire, as they would say in England. I have a lot of thoughts about what happened over the weekend. Also, the convention, of course, now is going on. The president has now announced his VP pick, which is... A surprise to me. If I had picked a VP pick, it would have been different. It would have been Byron Daniels. We'll talk about that later. President Trump is now officially the nominee. What's going on in the convention there? And I'm not going to get into much of what's going on in the convention. I'm interested in hearing the speech tonight. His acceptance speech of the nomination. I'm not sure what time that's supposed to be exactly, but I am looking forward to hearing that, as I'm sure many, many people are, considering the fact that it is amazing, I guess, that he is alive. I think most of us don't realize how close we come each day. How precious life is, and how close we come to losing that life. Every day of our lives, we don't. I think if we actually knew the times that we have come close to death each day, I think it's just one of those things that I think we need to be cognizant of. And of course, the left has already come out with all of their rhetoric, and it's. They're changing the narrative of everything. One of the things that's happening, and we'll go into this, cover this first, just because it's, I'll just get it out of the way. Something rather large has happened. This one, is it Judge Mercon, whatever her name is. I can't remember what her name is. She was kind of the one who was overseeing the whole case, the special counsel case that Jack Smith had been doing with the documents case in Florida, which just, I believe today, or possibly it was yesterday, the ruling actually came out, but it was today the ruling has been announced that the case has been thrown out under constitutional grounds because it's unconstitutional. Actually, the special counsel was put in place. And it is unconstitutional in the way that was done, or his qualifications, I guess, is the problem. Jack Smith wasn't qualified. Oopsie whoopsie on that one for the Dems there for this whole thing. However, I'm surprised that they went with that, mostly because of the fact that they typically don't. The rule of law. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional expert. I'm not a constitutional scholar, which I just recently found out. Who was it? Oh, Jamie Raskin. Jamie Raskin is a constitutional scholar. I don't know what it qualifies to be a constitutional scholar. I'm not exactly sure. all I can tell you is Jamie Raskin. He's right up there with Dan Goldman, with as being liars. I don't know how else to put it. He's one of the biggest liars in Congress, as well as Dan Goldman. I do want to talk a little bit about that in terms of the case itself. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a politician. I'm not a financial counselor, coach, anything of that nature. But I have a lot of opinions. I want to share them with you on this show. Now, having gotten that disclaimer out of the way, I do want to say a little bit about this case. This case has been fraught with problems from day one. It has been a political stunt. And speaking of political stunts, this is probably the biggest tell-all of the delusional factor of some people is the response to what happened over the weekend with Donald Trump, the attempted assassination. Now, was this a, political operative? Was this somebody who, let's just call it what it is. This is a kid, about 20 years old, caught up in the ridiculousness of the rhetoric that is going on with the left. They want to wash their hands of it. They're trying to blame this on Donald Trump, by the way. They're trying to blame this whole thing on himself. Well, he's the one who has all this rhetoric going on. It's his own fault for all this rhetoric. He's the one who's, No, folks, you guys have created a monster here. Interestingly enough, I had a brief conversation with a relative over the weekend. I won't get too much into the details of this, but the talking points that MSNBC and CNN continually make, all the twisted lies that happen are the same thing that Joe Biden throws out there. He told people to inject bleach. He told people. He said there were fine people on both sides. He said that one thing after another. And of course, now Donald Trump jokingly, unfortunately, anything he says, and it's the left wing media, and he doesn't care what the left wing media thinks. He says what he wants to say, and it's like that's their problem if they want to make an issue out of it. One of the things he did say was that on day one he's going to be a dictator, just for one day. Now this, they didn't take that. They said he's going to be a dictator day one. Yeah, day one he's going to be a dictator for one day. And you know what he's going to do with that dictatorship? He's going to start drilling oil for oil, drill, 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 and he's going to control the border. Oh, heaven forbid that the horror of these things that he's going to do on day one as a dictator. Yeah, but the left takes it as, he said he's going to be a dictator on day one. He said that. That's all. They leave it right there. There were fine people on both sides. They forget to include the rest of the statement. But he prefaced his statement about the fine people on both sides with the word, I'm not talking about the white supremacists and the racists. I condemn them totally. I'm talking, but there were fine people on both sides of the argument about whether or not the statues should be removed. He was the whole thing, and if the media really did their job, they would say this whole demonstration and protest and the rally that was going on there was the question of whether or not the statues should be taken down or not. There are a lot of statues. If you travel around the South very much at all, you will find statues everywhere. I guess if there's a difference between whether the horse is standing or whether the horse is in a reared position or whether it's got its, depending on how the horse is depicted, talks about whether or not the soldier fell in battle or not, or whether, those are the kinds of things that I think are, there's just all kinds of little things about the statues down there that talk about the history and what happened there. And there are a lot of people who say that they don't you're not racist just because you want to keep the statues there. The Civil War was a lot. The Civil War had more to do with, there was more going on there than just slavery. However, that was a big part. It became a big part of it. It was a very economic issue. A lot of things going on there. And speaking of this, now you think about this. There's some things I want to play later on. I got to write this down, or I won't remember to do it. But Eric Swalwell recently was talking to somebody who was interviewing. Shapiro. What's the kid's name? Shapiro. He's got the Daily Wire. He recently was being questioned before Congress, and being the great debater that he is, because he can talk fast, I was shocked at some of the responses he had to some of the questions he was being asked, especially by people like Eric Swalwell. He was asking him questions about personal religious beliefs and all kinds of things, and trying to make him out to be a monster. But at the same time, he was also talking about some other things about slavery and racism and all kinds of, the main thing was immigration. Talking about immigration, and I just thought that was just ridiculous the way he was, where he was going with some of this stuff. And again, because of the way he talked and some of the things he said, were very telling about what he thinks about immigrants himself. I would have had some very different responses when I heard it. My first response was very different, let's just put it that way, than what he happened to say. Now, having said all that, let's talk about what went through my mind and my emotions, my feelings, my thoughts when all of this was announced, when I first heard about the assassination attempt on Saturday. I had just sat down. We were with the family that day. I had just sat down to have some corn on the cob. There was some leftovers from the night before. We had our reunion that afternoon. Lots of food, lots of frolicking and fun. And we get back to the family's house that we were staying with. We had our motorhome there, and I was sitting down. My niece said, she was looking at her phone, she said, Donald Trump was just shot. Now, this family is not I would call a right-wing family. They are not conservatives. Amazingly enough, they are Christians. However, they are in academia. They have a very different background than what I have. Granted, they have, surprisingly, they have a lot of conservative values that I would consider conservative. But I think one of the biggest issues is the only place that they get their news, well, not the only place, but the main source of their news, at which they do not necessarily vet very well, is MSNBC and CNN. And unfortunately, in discussions with some of these family members, it's all I hear is the talking points that are twisted and lied about in their responses to what they think about Donald Trump. Now, we don't have much of a discussion about it. I let them say what they want to say. It's their home. I respect that, and they can have their own opinions. But I do ask questions. Now, of course, it obviously puts me in a position of, playing the, quote, devil's advocate, which is I'm not necessarily the devil's advocate in this situation. I am the devil, because I'm asking the questions because I'm truly interested in knowing, understanding their perspective and how they got to where they're at. But at the end of the day, what really legitimately, the basic bottom line is the way they got to where they're at is because they believe what they're listening to. That probably is the toughest part of the conversation, is because I have to bring up things like, okay, do you realize this and do you realize that? I'm not going to let a politician come between me and a family member. I'm sorry. We're just going to agree to disagree and move on from that, because family is more important. And I'm not going to allow that. We're not going to disown somebody because they don't vote for the person I think they should, or because they have a difference of opinion. Now, however, constitutionally, there's a lot of issues in that I think philosophically and just in terms of historically, some of the issues that have come up in the past, that some of the things that are the points that are argued and worthy of discussion, I think, and worthy of the debate, there are things about democracy and the republic and that kind of thing. And I was surprised because, you know, the academic nature of things that people sometimes in academia, they are steeped in certain philosophical genre, dogma sometimes, and have a harder time, I think, accepting that someone else out there just on their own has the education that they have or that they're. Now, one of the things that was discussed was this whole thing of democracy. They want to get rid, he wants to get rid of democracy. These people want to get rid of democracy. Why would somebody? And of course, there's so many things that are, when you start going down that rabbit hole, making those kinds of statements, I have to, you know, back up and just think, okay, we've got to start from a point where we can kind of logically make some sense here. So I'll start asking some questions. One of the things I, you know, was asking in some of this conversation was, okay, what do we have, a democracy or do we have a republic? And what kind of republic do we have? Well, we have a republic, but it's a democracy. It's a form of democracy. Okay, well, what kind of republic do we have then? Do we use it? We use a, you know, our republic is based on individual rights. Is it not? You know, I ask these kinds of questions. Is our republic based on a collective mindset, a collective philosophy, or is it based on an individualist philosophy and philosophical platform? So, of course, then the question is, that becomes a point of contention, because that's really at the heart of it. Now, once you can maintain and establish that, hey, okay, the founders actually believed in individual rights. So is the Bill of Rights for groups of people, or is it for individuals? Because when I said something about a pure democracy, and of course that got muddled up, and I realized I'm dealing with someone that, in one of the conversations, I said, I'm dealing with someone who's really kind of trapped in a particular formula of arguing about a democracy. And I wanted to go back to Socrates and say this whole thing of what is a democracy? What is a pure democracy? Where everyone can vote. That is a mob rule situation where 51% of the people can vote, the other 49% dead. They can take away all the rights of the other 49%. So that is what's called mob rule, and that's not what we have in this country. And the founders understood that and recognized that, and it is a very dangerous philosophical, political thing. Now, having said that, 99% of the people can vote or can want to kill 1% of the people, but they can't because those people have the right to life. So without due process, you can't take that away. The question is whether or not you can have due process that's legitimate. If 99% of the people in the country, are electing the judges and everything else that's going on out there, because they have to follow the rule of law. You can't legislate from the bench. You can't be an activist from the bench, or else our entire system will fall apart because the individual's rights are being compromised. When you start giving everybody special group rights, in other words, well, your skin color is this, so we're going to give you special right. We're going to give you special protections. Your orientation is whatever, your philosophical bent, your religion, or whatever it is XYZ, so therefore you're going to get special rights, or special protections. Special rights is what that is, but they call it special protection. You're a protected class. Well, that means you get special rights. In that formula, at some point, someone's left out of all these special rights. That is the person who's compromised, and all of a sudden everybody else has rights that you don't have, and you are now at the bottom. You are the person without rights, or whose rights can be taken away or have been taken away simply by nature of the groups that have been given special rights. This was not what our founders intended at all. That they intended that the individuals are all protected. We all have rights. If anybody has special rights over another person, that's immoral. So we have this situation where people in this country, and this is where the Republicans, you know, if the Democrat Party is all about democracy and understanding that, you know, the democratic process, and yet they're the worst ones about in their own within their own party. They're terrible about democracy. They don't care about what the people vote on. What the people care, you know, they're not about. They've proven that in the last three now conventions. We have just the whole nature of the way they have their entire, you know, convention set up. The whole DNC is set up. It's just a mess. It's not democracy. It's not democratic. I want to call it that. However, the Republican Party is the same way. The Republican Party is not a republic. They don't understand the even basic fundamental principles of what a republic is and why we establish a republic. So to call themselves Republicans is really just another name for just the same side of two different sides of the same coin. Basically, it's a uniparty issue. Just who gets to be in power based on certain philosophical ideals. But the Republican Party is terrible about educating people in the idea of this, the fact that we are in here's what we are. We are a constitutional republic that uses a democratic process to elect representatives to protect our rights, the rights of the individual, based on what our Constitution recognizes as the individual rights of the rights of individuals that have been endowed to them. In other words, government didn't give us these rights. Our government is for, of, and by the people. So the government is for the people, of the people, and by the people. We decide on our own who elects our representatives. And our representatives go to Congress, our representatives go to office with the express mission of protecting the rights of every individual. That's why I elect my particular representative to go to Congress and protect and defend my rights. Not to create more rights, not to make rights for someone else, not to decide how much money he's going to take from me or he or she's going to take from me. But the whole purpose is to defend our rights. That's their number one job. Now you'll hear them say all kinds of, well, the number one job of government is to keep us safe. No, it's not. Actually, it's not to keep our rights safe. I can keep myself safe. We elect local government for that, for those kinds of things. We have local police departments and people who are from our community that we establish to be people who we're going to have as our as our representative, as our you know, collective security people. The collective works well on a macro scale, not on a national centralized scale. We saw that, I think, hopefully, we saw that during COVID, how ridiculous centralized government is when they just institute a blanket policy for the entire country. Well, everybody's got to stay shelter in place, and everybody's got to do this, and everybody's got to wear masks on, and everybody's got to get this vaccine. How about the big cities are totally different than the rural areas in this country. There are areas that where this thing spread like crazy. There were areas that it wasn't even introduced yet, and they were still having to live under these mandates that the centralized government was putting out there. It's just too diversified. And at the end of the day, everyone should be kind of calling their own shots on some of those things. So it's just interesting to have these kinds of conversations and to see that the differences, the great vast expanse between these two things, and they're all based on just platitudes and who wants to be in power. So the shooting that happened over the weekend, when I heard about this, I sat down, was eating, just started to eat my corn, and I heard that. And I thought that they were this couldn't be correct. And I at first I was kind of stunned and shocked and thought, well, this is some kind of meme or something. What is this going on? And then someone else said, oh yeah, it looks like he was shot at a rally or something. And I'm So my first thought is he still alive? Because when you just say someone was shot, there's this implication that they may not be alive, or they. I'm still trying to process what went through my mind and my heart and my emotions in that moment. Something inside of me prepared for this. There was a sinking feeling. What would our country be like without Donald Trump running for president? Not only what is the reaction going to be from the nation, but my own reaction from within me was kind of shocking. Something inside of me welled up. I can't necessarily call it anger, and yet there was some anger there. There was an indignation that rose up within me. It's the only way I'd know to describe it. Not righteous indignation necessarily, but that may have been part of it. But a welling up of feeling like enough is enough. This has got to stop. If Donald Trump had been killed on Saturday by some violent act like this, there would have been a civil war in this country. I am convinced of that. I'm also convinced that this amazing event that took place, the sheer astounding details of everything that happened, is when we'll learn more as it comes out. Had the bullets missed him completely, this probably would have been a shocking event, but nothing as shocking as actual blood happening at this point. Bloodshed. They drew blood from the president, the former president, potentially the next president. The sheer closeness as he was moving his head around. Most of you, I'm not going to play the audio of any of this because I'm sure you've all heard it plenty of times. When I first saw the entire event, and I see his ear, he's reaching for his ear because he knows something just happened. How close that was in that moment. Had it been just a few millimeters away from his ear, it would have drawn no blood, and the incident would not have been, nobody would have even known the bullet got that close. Nobody would have known anything about it. We would have heard, still would have been the shooting, the assassination attempt would have been there. But, and of course, the other people in the way of those bullets would have certainly had, unfortunately, one person was killed, a couple other people were seriously injured. Still would have been a horrific, horrible event. But, well, I'll get into that later. Had it been just a few millimeters, and I'm talking millimeters, not centimeters. I've heard people say, oh, if it was just a few centimeters. No, we're talking millimeters. That was very close to his skull. A few millimeters over, maybe 5 or 6 a quarter of an inch, would have been into the skull. At that point, at that velocity, from that range, that bullet would have blown the skull into the side of his head, into his brain. And in fact, had he not turned his head, that bullet would have hit his cerebrum. He just happened to turn his head at the same time the shooter was shooting, because that bullet went flying by. And that the thing that was in the way right before he turned his head was his cerebellum. Cerebellum controls everything with your heart, your breathing, everything, you know, that all the unconscious things that happen in our, the back part of your brain that controls all those things that we don't have to think about. He would have been gone. There would have been nothing, no life possible at that point, not even a vegetable of a life. The closeness of the situation speaks to a lot of things and speaks to a lot of people. If you hear the stories about George Washington and some of the things that happened to him, the closeness that he came to death so many times in battle, he had buttons shot off of his chest, off of his coat. Very close calls. Now, I'm going to tell you what that does to a person. Now, I haven't been shot at, but I've had guns drawn on me. And it takes you a while to decompress from that. It takes you a while to process that. And I'm sure he's still processing that. It's going to be very interesting to hear his speech. If he's making a speech tonight, it's going to be very interesting to hear that at the convention tonight. I'm sure it will be an intense, very good, excellent. You're not going to sit back in your chair and fall asleep kind of speech. This is everybody's intently going to be paying attention to this. I think one of the most iconic things that happened after I saw that, when I heard that he was still alive, I was taken back in that moment by what I had just experienced internally. Because a million things went through my head. But internally, there was a lot going on. And I felt this sense of relief at the same time. I felt this sense of surprise at how it had affected me. And what if he had actually been killed? I think the nation's response would have been very interesting at that point. Now, there are people in this country. There are people on TikTok, on social media, all kinds of wacky, lunatic people who are upset that the shooter missed. These people are sick in the head. They think Donald Trump is the monster. They need to look in a mirror. Because, friends, those people are bigger monsters than Donald Trump will ever be. He would never wish them dead. They wish him dead. Tell me, who is the monster? There is no self-awareness, no introspection on these people. And the end justifies the means. They are so full of their own self-righteousness. They can't see past. Their own depravity. So, J.D. Vance, the VP, not who I would have expected. I just don't know that much about the guy. I have not paid attention to what's going on with that whole thing. I knew there was nothing I could do about it. It wasn't my choice to make. We will find out over the next few. I think he's one of the youngest VPs that have ever been put into place. Certainly going to be much better than Kamala Harris. And it'll be interesting to hear them debate if they ever get to debate. It's going to be very interesting to hear because it's going to be a bloodbath. But the whole thing of this assassination attempt, the closeness of the call, it not only affects the nation. The nation is basically shocked and inspired, I think, by the fact that look, this is almost everyone's using the term providential. This was the grace of God protecting him in a moment that could have gone very badly. Now, how does this affect Donald Trump? In the moments after the shooting, he remained large and in charge. He didn't just defer to everybody else around him. He remained the leader of that situation. This is important to recognize. No matter what you think about the guy, he decided when he was going off that stage. Now, some would say, well, he was continuing to endanger the lives of those who were protecting him. I don't think so. He heard, everybody else heard, everybody that was there heard, shooters down. The shooter's down. It's within just a few seconds after the shots were fired that the counter sniper team, the CST, was able to take him out. By the time the Secret Service got to President Trump, got him up off, they were getting ready to move him off out of the situation, they had already heard, before they even got him up off the floor, they had heard that the shooter was down. So and Donald Trump heard that as well. So he knew he was fully cognizant and aware of the situation around him. He wanted to get his shoes. Oh, whatever happened to his shoes? Wow, it was his shoes. I don't know if he takes his shoes off when he's doing a speech. I'm not sure what happens there. He wanted his shoes. Then he recognized we can't just walk off this stage. He did in a moment I think that galvanized him forever with the GOP when he stood up and shook his fist in the air and said, fight, fight, fight. The people who were there were expecting an hour-long speech that was entertaining and fun and, we got some souvenirs and we got some trinkets and we got some chances to take pictures of the president. What they got in those 5 minutes, when you saw people, and this is the thing I've heard more people say, more independents say, more people who don't care about politics, they look at that and they said, nobody ran away. Nobody was running. This crowd of people, he gets up and shakes his fist and says, fight, 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 and everyone stands to their feet in defiance. Because guess what? They had a leader who was leading. If he would have just been ushered off the stage, the mood, the tone of everything that just had happened would have been completely different. He changed the chemistry of what happened in that moment simply by taking that stand on that stage and lifting his fist up and saying, fight, fight, fight. And there are commentators on the left that are saying, that's the kind of rhetoric that we don't need right now. That's the wrong words to say. You get shot in the ear and see how you feel about it. They have come after him with everything they have, trying to take everything he has. And you're going to nitpick something that happened to him in a moment where he got shot. Shoot Joe Biden in the ear and see what happens to him. Going to cry like a baby. Now, how this affects, as this soaks in, I guarantee it. I was in a situation where there were guns involved, and it took almost a week to really process it. It took 48 hours at least to process what had happened to me. It affected my thinking patterns. You know, I kept replaying the event in my head. It's almost like a PTSD thing, but you have to process it. Your brain has to process what just happened to you. You can't just absorb it all. He's going to see video of this. He's going to hear about the stories of what was happening around him. then there's all the questions of what was Secret Service doing? Local police were actually in charge of everything outside the event. However, Secret Service is still responsible for making sure that local police are doing what they're supposed to be doing to secure the area. They entrust them to certain things, but they're still responsible for making sure that the area is secure, period. So, this is what we have. We have a potential president here that is unstoppable and unbeatable at this point because of what just happened. Now, there's still a lot of time between now and November. But I guarantee you, the Republican Party, those who would consider, who were having some problems with Donald Trump, all of a sudden realize this is the guy the country needs right now. This is the kind of leader we need in the state, in this country right now. He was shot at, hit in the ear. Now, the place he was hit wasn't just on the outside of his ear either. It was on the inside, right next to his skull, went right across the top of his ear. The next day, he was out golfing. This guy is tough. He is resolved. He's on a mission. Not to destroy democracy, not to destroy our Constitution. He's fighting for all of us. He realizes the stakes that we are involved in at this point. It's the kind of leader we need. I think that has galvanized now. I wasn't a big Trump guy. I was ready. If I had a Trump flag, I would have been flying it the next day. I'm ready to put one up my mast on my boat. I'm ready to put Trump flags and American flags on the back of my Jeep. I've always been an American flag guy, but it's just now it's okay. This is now he has iconicized or iconoclast, whatever you call it is. Yeah, the icon now is what Trump represents now. That classic picture of him holding his fist up with blood on his face and the American flag flying in the background. That wasn't imposed. That wasn't AI. That wasn't. And there are people on the left who have the audacity to say that this was set up. Those people should be fired. But these are the people that some people listen to all the time. Oh, maybe it was. Maybe it was a set. Maybe it was just all for show. Maybe it was just all this grandstanding. Yeah, people died that day. Hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be moving around the stage. Go ahead and shoot my ear off. So, for the show. Yeah, it doesn't happen that way. Now, this kid was deranged. This kid was a problem. But he was a product of the left. No question about that. He mentally wasn't mentally right. Oh, he was a registered Republican. Yeah. In Pennsylvania, they have this thing called a closed primary, and a lot of people do this. There are people who are true sold-out activists, which he was one. He was kind of an anti-Antifa guy. He was involved in some of the riots. What they do is they register for the opposition party so that they can help to vote somebody in that can't win. They can go into the, this happens all the time, in closed primaries. They want to pick the person for the other party. I want to pick the worst possible. This is why I don't like open primaries. I think they're ridiculous. But there are people who will sacrifice their ability, because they don't care about who their candidate is on their side. They just, because they have a platform, they have an agenda, and they know that person has to abide by their agenda. On the other side, they'll register as a Republican because they can go in and vote for somebody that they know can't win. There you have it. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. I really need to get going because I do have some things to do this evening and try to get some more things accomplished here. Had a rough day. Work-wise, everything was fine. Just personal in my personal life. A companion that I've had for 14 years, man's best friend, had to be put down today. and was not easy. It was not easy for me. This particular dog had a special place in my heart because of everything he had gone through in his life. And I hope I gave him a good life. Hope he had fun, lots of adventures. He traveled around the country with me. He's my companion for many years, 24/7. And yes, I will deeply miss him. My home will never be the same without him. So, I appreciate your prayers, just getting through that. It's just, it's not easy. Folks, once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing, commenting, whatever you're doing with this podcast. And we will talk to you hopefully again tomorrow. I possibly will have a show again tomorrow, but it's going to be another late show because I'll be coming back from Manchester in the morning and hopefully back in a position where I can, I'm not sure, I don't think I'm doing anything else tomorrow back in Chicago, but I'll probably be doing a show again, either from the boat tomorrow afternoon or possibly somewhere else, maybe. Who knows? I might go somewhere else. God bless, folks. Take care. Pray for our nation. Pray for our leaders. Thank you for praying for Donald Trump, our next president. Well, our next, in the next term. I have a feeling that Kamala Harris may be the 47th president, which would make Donald Trump the 48th. There's a whole biblical thing. I'm going to talk to you about that. But that's a whole other story. I'll talk more about this later on. I'll have some audio, some things later in the week. God bless. Have a great week, folks. Thanks for listening.